Coast to coast on the World Wide Web, this is Trot Radio on standardbreakcanada.ca. Norm Borg here. When my next guest took over at the helm of Woodbine Entertainment Group, it was, to say the least, a sinking ship. 15 years later, the flagship of Canadian racing is sailing right ahead thanks to the efforts of Dave Wilmot, outgoing CEO of Woodbine, our special guest on this edition of Trot Radio. Mr. David Wilmot is on the other end of my line as he gets ready to wrap up his tenure as CEO of Woodbine Entertainment Group. Mr. Wilmot, welcome to Trot Radio.
How are you, Norm? Nice to speak with you.
I'm well, thank you. And, you know, you've got to look back with a great deal of satisfaction over your years at Woodbine as the chief executive officer. When you took over, it was bleeding money. That was in 94. And now it's a going concern.
Well, it's been, I'm not sure that the expression never a dull day at the office is more applicable than it has been here over the last number of years. You know, ours is a wonderful industry with a lot of different components, all faced with varying challenges. So certainly over the last period of time, there have been lots of challenges, and fortunately, we've managed to deal with most of them. Not all of them, but most of them.
In 1994, you even had to consider selling some of the artwork to pay for track refurbishing. I think it's important for the listeners and even for first-year business students to really look at this as a case study on how to rescue a failing business. What were the major steps, as you look back, that were taken to really turn things around?
Well, in the early years, it was very simple. We had to regain the bank's confidence that we were prepared to run the organization as a business. So not only did we consider selling the art off the director's room walls, we did. We sold the art for approximately $4.5 million, and we used it for the first part of refurbishment in the grandstand, the old Etobicoke room, which is now Favorites. We refurbished that. We did some other work, and I remember Dave Perkins from the Star being here when the media was looking around, and he said, "How'd you pay for this?" And I said, "Well, we sold the art off the director's room walls." And he said, "And you didn't spend it on the swells, you spent it on the average folks." And I said, "That's right." And he said, "Well, things are different." But we had a long, serious lockout of our mutual clerks. They were our biggest collective bargaining unit. We rolled them back. I'm not proud of that. That was one of those things that was necessary in order to save the company financially, but the savings from that contract alone were critical in keeping the bank's confidence. It was also that year, and we lobbied heavily, and it was the Ernie Eves budget in May of that year was critical in terms of reducing the parimutuel tax and passing the enabling legislation for the slots. In the bank's mind, seeing us make the difficult decisions on the cost side, but also improving our opportunities on the revenue side, the Bank of Montreal, as it was at that time, regained its confidence in us and continued to support us. The biggest thing, Norm, that to put it as succinctly as I can, is we had to change the whole culture and mindset of the company from that of a non-profit, forget not-for-profit, a non-profit, into a focus and a culture of being very business-like and being profitable. And that was the biggest shift that had to be made during those years.
Exactly. And you talked about the fact that you showed your bank that you could also create revenue. And in that year of the strike or the lockout or lockdown, whichever you want to call it, the labor dispute with the tellers, you still managed to put on the Breeders' Cup, first time it had ever been held outside the U.S.
That's right. And it certainly, as we all know from that time, the Breeders' Cup was in fact put in jeopardy for a few days right around the end of the negotiations on the new contract. But fortunately, it went forward. It was a great success. God shined his light on us with weather. It could have been not nearly as successful had we had the snow that arrived the next day. But on Breeders' Cup Day, it was wonderful, and many Europeans that I continue to see at the Breeders' Cup, many Europeans, especially because they love our turf course, continue to say that that was the best Breeders' Cup that there has ever been.
You were ahead of the curve in terms of bringing wagering online and on television with HPI. It started out as TRN.
TRN started in the U.S., and we were a partner. I was I was chairman of TRN when it was based at Philadelphia Park, and when TRN US failed, we had already created TRN Canada, which morphed into HPI, and going to the CRTC hearings and getting the approval for our own horse racing network was one of the highlights. The new 7/8 tracks, Mohawk, and then the ultimate refurbishing of Mohawk and the Poly track here at Woodbine on the thoroughbred track, and the new harness paddock here at Woodbine, and it was nice to be able to do something virtually every year, which moved us forward and was a good use of our reinvested capital and continued to build the business.
You have made the tough decisions, and those tough decisions continue to be made right up until this year. You touched on labor conflict. Your negotiations with OHA, your refusal to recognize OHA, was certainly one of those tough decisions.
Oh, without question, and not a decision that was easily made by our board, but it, unfortunately, the nature of the relationship had got to the point where we really didn't believe that we were dealing with or talking to or negotiating with our horsemen. And by our horsemen, I mean the horsemen that race regularly at Woodbine and Mohawk. That finally, I think, came down to the final stroke was where the call for the boycott was not supported, which was indicative of the point I just made. And so we just felt that we had to move in a different direction, and the fellows that put together COSA, most of them are ex-OHA directors, so it's not as if they're in the pocket of WEG or anything. They're independently minded, terrific horsemen, and they want what's best for the industry, and we want to be able to work together with a horseman's group that represents our horsemen, and so far that's been a successful relationship.
Your tenure will end in March. Nick Eaves takes over. What do you see as the biggest challenges facing Mr. Eaves?
The biggest challenge that we see at the moment is harness racing in Ontario in terms of its structure and the whole supply and demand equation as it relates to the customer. We don't want to be a slot distribution mechanism. We want to be a racetrack that has good racing, which is still a competition in the best sense of the word, not a socialistic trickle-down means of distributing non-wagering income. That's not what our business is, but that's a real challenge these days. The harness pools have been declining throughout the province, and we have to somehow reverse that trend.
In the second part of our two-part interview with Woodbine outgoing CEO Dave Wilmot, he'll take a very frank look at one of the biggest challenges facing our sport, namely illegal online gambling on racing. That's next on Trot Radio.